Thank you, Nick. Well, good evening, everybody in the hall here tonight, and also welcome to those on the net tuning in from wherever you're living. A big welcome along to Dharmaloka this Wednesday night for our midweek meditation. And first of all, I just want to apologise for what happened last week when the recording somehow went astray or went awry, and we weren't able to do the stream or even to put up a copy afterwards. Our system somehow failed us last week, but hopefully this week everything is fine. So welcome along to everybody. And again, just to begin, I would like to just mention the care group, because there are people manning the phones at this present time up in our care house just behind the hall here in Dharmaloka. And if you feel like you would like to call and talk over anything at all that you would like to speak about, there are listeners there waiting for your call. So, and also, I was just thinking too that anyone that's listening closer by in Perth, if you would like to come by here on Wednesday evenings and take part in the session here, there is always at least one or two or three or four listeners around. So you'll always find someone to talk to. And if you prefer to talk to someone face to face, Wednesday evenings would be a good time to come along and do it. So tonight, I wanted to pick up a little bit from what we were talking about last week, mainly because often, for most of you, you didn't really get the idea of the talk, and because I love the subject so much, when we sort of named it, the name of the talk tonight is Maturing Mindfulness. And I think it's quite a wonderful thing to think about, because mindfulness itself is such an important factor in the Eightfold Path, such an important factor in the way that we need to practice, and the way we need to understand ourselves, and sort of as we're looking in, as we're self-reflecting on ourselves and looking in and understanding what it is that we're seeing, and gradually coming to terms with what we are, what you notice yourself to be inside, which is always, it's always very interesting just to watch, just as the meditation settles down, the meditation settles and settles, and then any of the issues that you might have deeper in your mind, issues that sometimes push us around terribly, really, but as the meditation gradually settles, we're able to sort of see what is starting to come up for us, starting to see the just what it is that's maybe down there that's sometimes pushes us around without us even knowing. So this meditation is such a wonderful thing to be able to notice that, just to notice what it is that is there. As I've sort of quite often mentioned when I'm sort of talking about this or teaching meditation, I can remember that Ajahn Sumedho, one of my favourite monks, favourite teachers, he once said that that meditation is really nothing more than a skillful mental breakdown. And I think that's such a lovely vision of just what meditation is, as we kind of get to, as we self-reflect and then we get to understand ourselves as we're coming closer to the present moment, understanding the present moment more and more, and understanding how important the present moment is more and more, and all of these little issues that sort of stop and hinder us from becoming peaceful in our meditation. It's all there to see as the mind settles, and then when we're using, say, the three factors in the Eightfold Path to do with meditation, it's just just the concentration or the samadhi factor of the Eightfold Path. We do that. We learn to concentrate and go deeper and deeper into ourselves, deeper and deeper into the present moment. But then there's this second part, this mindfulness, right mindfulness that the Buddha talked about. And this is what I wanted to just focus a little bit more on tonight again. But even just moving on from just mindfulness, where we're maybe using it just to look fairly casually at what what's arising for us inside our minds, but to look a little bit more deeper. And this is what I'm sort of pointing to with mindfulness maturing. As our mindfulness matures, there's sort of much more deeper wisdom and deeper understanding that we can have from this mindfulness. And when we get to the meditation part tonight, I hope to lead you along into that tonight so that you can just get a little bit of a feel or an idea of what I'm talking about with this maturing of mindfulness. And then, of course, just finishing off the third part of the Eightfold Path there that has to do with meditation is right energy. And right energy is always a very important thing too, just to get that right balance. And energy is all about balance in our lives and in our mind. And that's certainly right there as a factor. So this meditation really is always really about uncovering the present moment, sort of the realization that this present moment is really the only reality that there is. And I'm assuming that all of you here will all the teachers here and the monks and nuns always talk about that so much. So I'm assuming that most of you probably have been well and truly conditioned with that idea. But it's always important just to look and make sure for yourself too that is the right way to see things. Just the realisation that the past is finished. You know, whatever we're bringing from the past, especially if it's blind, if we can't see what it is that we're bringing from the past into the present, that's always a bit of a worry for us, because it will cause us to not be mindful enough to just, we're sort of points to the fact that we're not really quite mindful enough to be able to just see what it is that we're bringing in from the past, because whatever we bring in from the past is certainly finished and gone. And then, of course, when we look the other side of the present moment into the future, we always can see very clearly that the future isn't yet to come. And even though we might be dreaming about the future and we might have views and opinions and ideas about what we're going to do and what would be good for us or what we want for our family or all of these things, which are, you know, there's nothing wrong with anything like that, but the reality is, just as we look at these things, is that we really have no control at all over the future. The future, you know, we don't really even know if the sun is going to come up tomorrow. It's a favourite sort of a thing that I keep thinking about myself. Because even the sun's rays that come to us, they're always 8 minutes old. So you don't really quite know. The sun could have finished 8 minutes ago and we wouldn't really even know here on Earth, because it takes that long to get here. And then, of course, from other places in the universe, it's even much more. We talk about light years and things like that for the light to reach us. So involved with this mindfulness and maturing of mindfulness, I wanted to again just introduce this subject of the seven factors of enlightenment. I did mention these last week because mindfulness is the first one, the first factor of the seven factors here that the Buddha talked about with enlightenment, and mindfulness is right there. And when we're thinking about mindfulness here as the first factor of enlightenment, we can always sort of see that it's a very balanced and it's right on the balance point of all of these factors. There's seven of them. And the next three, and I've just made a note here on my little list here that I've got, that this is these three are more like the active side of mindfulness. And there's investigation, and then there's energy, and then there's joy, rapture, and also this idea of beauty. And again, I'll try and point you towards that a little bit into the meditation tonight. But those three things, investigation, I mean, that's what we've been taught, what I've just been talking about at the beginning. When we're self-reflecting, looking back on ourselves, looking back onto our mind, using the meditation to settle us down, to bring us right down and make the mind still. As the mind becomes more still, there's all sorts of things can arise. But it's also important to understand that sometimes these insights and these ideas that we get from our meditation, you won't kind of necessarily see them until after the meditation is finished. These insights usually arise because of the clarity and the insight that comes when you are meditating and trying to make your mind still. But the fact is that as your mind gets more still, there's more insight, more clarity that's starting to build. You're starting to build up this store of potential energy in your mind. You know, it's a bit like when you dam up a river or a creek. The water starts to build up behind the dam, and there is always then an energy potential behind the dam. And this is exactly how it is in our mind. As we stop the mind from thinking, we kind of allow the energy, the natural energy that's there in this, what actually gets more and more powerful, especially as we get closer to the present moment, this energy starts to build and build. And so you have this potential that's there ready to use. But very often the use of that energy comes about in insights that follow the meditation, maybe in the days following, or maybe the minutes or the hours following, but the days and maybe even weeks, just as you start to realise these things. Because meditation is like this. It's an inclination, a gentle, gradual inclination towards truth, towards the present moment. And the present moment is really a factor of truth. And then, just as in the fourth factor here, I'm talking about joy and rapture and beauty. Because there is truth in the present moment, there is always truth that there's always beauty that goes with truth. You know, that's sort of so really in everywhere. Most even the physicist Einstein used to talk about this. He'd always know if his equation was right or getting towards the mark of what he was looking for by how beautiful it looked. And he knew when he had a beautiful equation, he would always know that he was very close to the truth with it. And that's sort of how it is for us too. As you kind of practice being with the stillness and you start to really understand and celebrate really the joy of being still, that this beauty just naturally starts to arise. So all this is on the active side of the seven factors of enlightenment. And then there is the passive side of the seven factors too that are also there for us. And they're just simply, number five is tranquility, and then concentration. And the seventh one is equanimity. Equanimity is really... well, in all of the cases, is really just like the crowning glory. It's something that sort of that fits over the whole lot, just to caps everything off beautifully. The crowning glory of our practice is equanimity, and the Buddha uses equanimity as a term, really, in so many lists that he made. it's certainly one of the factors of the four Brahma Viharas. The last one, just to be equanimous, because it just brings everything together and sort of fits and makes everything kind of mesh, and you just know that everything's in balance, everything is right, everything's right with the world, everything's right with yourself. So these seven factors of enlightenment are really quite an important thing to contemplate. And you'll notice sort of certainly the way that I like to practice, so I kind of like these lists of things. I'm always sort of telling you about and teaching you about these lists of things that the Buddha made, because he made a list for just about every situation. You can look back over, there's really, you know, so many of them, so many different ways that he described the problems that we have in our lives, and he described ways of, through these lists, he described ways of being able to work with what he's talking about in these lists, so that you can overcome whatever that problem is. But these seven factors of enlightenment, as I say, there's the first ones are more like the active side of the equation, and then the last three, the tranquility and the concentration and the equanimity, they're more a passive, more the passive side. But it doesn't, when I was thinking about this week with this though too, because whenever you think about meditation, I think it's always good to have a nice balance in your own body too. So having a nice intellectual idea of the way things are, that's always good. But we never ever really want to be sort of, like university professors, say, with meditation, because the other factor that always works is the emotional side, the heart. So having the head and the heart balanced, and it's a little bit like what we're talking here, the active and the passive side of it, because the emotional side probably is more of a passive side, but not necessarily. Sometimes I think that our hearts rule our head more than the other way around, certainly as human beings. But it does take both of those qualities of intellect and emotion to really to make us to bring us to the full extent of our humanity, I think. So as we use this mindfulness is really what we're trying to do with mindfulness, is to really to bring this idea of the stillness of mind into our lives over a 24-hour period, if it's possible, to go to sleep with mindfulness, to wake up with mindfulness, to do the first jobs of the day with mindfulness. So when you're eating, with mindfulness, when you're bathing or washing, or if you're driving your car, whatever you're doing, it's always possible to have mindfulness right there. And eventually, as all the aspects of the practice start to come together for us, we start to see that we do have this stillness that's there. And the stillness is really always pointing to the transcendental part of our lives. When the Buddha was talking about this, he always talked about the stillness as being so very important to cultivate. And in the practice that we do, and again I'll try and sort of highlight this again a bit tonight, to be able to see the stillness and really fully understand it, to notice just how it is, what the experience of being still is like, is just so very important to work with and to practice to be with. Because when the stillness is there, you've got yourself really a full-time datum for your life. It means that you can live your life and always use your life as a reflection from the stillness of your mind. Now, people experience the stillness in all sorts of ways. I know the monk that I was talking about before, Ajahn Sumato, he always talks about it as the sound of silence. So, and that's kind of an interesting way to do it, you know. And he'll sort of ask sometimes when he was teaching like this, he would often ask like a rhetorical question. Oh, is it tinnitus? He would say, is it tinnitus? And, you know, maybe when you're sort of starting out with this, it might kind of feel a little bit like a hearing quality, something from the hearing senses. But as you kind of practice and go deeper with it, you see that this stillness, this silence is really something that really starts to go past the senses. We start to see that the silence of mind is really... it's really giving us an indication of the boundaries of our mind, just the extent of where our mind goes to. And in actual fact, it ends up taking in the whole universe. So the whole universe, you know, eventually we start to realise, and this is starting to get back to this idea of maturing your mindfulness. You start to appreciate that this whole universe is inside you, the whole of everything that we create, everything that we do, we're doing it from our own mind. Our mind is, and the Buddha said this, it's the first verse in the Dhammapada, is mind is chief, mind is the forerunner of all things. So it's quite lovely and very important too to see just in when we're allowing ourselves to be... to be more mature in understanding our lives and ourselves and our being and our world and all of the creatures in the world and everything that we're involved with here in this earth. It's all really mind-made. But eventually we can get to a point where the stillness starts to point us into this direction. We can start to see that this is true. I mean, it's not just something that you can really just use or talk about in a dogmatic way. To really understand this, you need to really see it inside your own mind. And this happens in the meditation. It happens with the insight that comes as the stillness and that potential of your mind starts to grow and starts to expand. Then you start to see these wonderful insights, you know, this idea that, yes, the universe is inside me. My mind creates the universe. And then gradually, as you're thinking about this, and Ajahn Brahm's teacher, Ajahn Chah, he always talked about this next thing that I'm just going to mention is about the transcendental part, which is really just knowing what the stillness is. And the stillness is really isn't anything more than just you can think of it as the space in this room, the space that's in the universe. It's spaciousness of mind. But you can go more the Mahayanan way. They kind of talk about it more as emptiness. And you can think about it like that everything has this empty quality to it. But then it's also, you can think about it in terms of the way that I really like to think about it is more in terms of pure consciousness. So that when we are looking at this stillness, we're really looking right in the heart of pure consciousness. And the Buddha talked about this as he made a list of these, what he called khandhas, they're the aggregations of consciousness, really. So, but even stillness itself is an aggregated quality, an aggregated condition. It's a condition of the mind. And really, you can think about this sort of anything at all that you can objectify, and this stillness is something that you can objectify. It's something you can make an object of. If you can make an object of anything at all, like anything, whatever you can objectify, means it's not you, you're separate from it. So as you start to understand that, just to see all of these separated things, these objective things that we have in our mind, like, you know, even say the pure consciousness. But then as that consciousness moves in this, in the second, I'm going around that the wrong way actually, because that's pure consciousness is the fifth kanda. But as we come back to the fourth kanda, so you've got this pure still consciousness that's not moving, which is the fifth kanda, and then coming back to the fourth kanda is consciousness moving. The Buddha talked about that, the movement of mind, the movement of consciousness. And that's very different than when we're looking at the stillness, because we've already started to look at a flow of consciousness, which turns out again to be the third factor in the 12 steps of dependent origination that we talked about a few weeks ago. So once you've got a flow of consciousness going there, then this whole, it only takes a couple more steps in there until the whole sort of universe is just right there, and we've got this flowing consciousness that's happening for us as we live our lives and kind of use the world as we might to live our lives. So this movement of consciousness, this flow of consciousness, is really it's an important thing to understand and see. But again with these insights that mindfulness brings, this starts to crystallise much more. Just the idea that we are kind of involved. We're lost really in this flow of consciousness as we kind of live our lives in this world. But then the third kanda is really the perceptions that we have, the perceptions build that we have from this flow of consciousness, the perceptions that are there. And they're always very personal things too, aren't they, perceptions? It's not really, they're not really, people can certainly have the same perception as each other, but they are very much individualized. We can have very different perceptions from one person to another. And then once the perceptions start to form in these lists of kandas that the Buddha talked about, then there's feelings. Feelings come up after that. And once there's feelings come, then we get back to the first kanda, which is just rupa, which means that's, and when the Buddha talked about this, he just means everything that's physical. The whole world is just there then. We're fused into the world. But with mindfulness and the maturing of mindfulness, we can sort of start to break all this down and start to notice this. Maybe not necessarily in just one meditation session, but as I was saying, is this gradual inclination that we practice to be with over the years. We can start to really develop some insight into just what it is that the Buddha was pointing to here with all of this. Such a beautiful teaching. And just before we, because I will just start some meditation in a minute, but I wanted to just finish this last little bit just by mentioning another thing that the Buddha talked about with all of this, because even just understanding the stillness in the way that I've talked about it there, or understanding the world as aggregations, kandas, aggregations of consciousness that build and into all of the complexity that we see, the complexity that the physicists try to unravel for us. All those complexities are there in this life that we're living. But we can, as I say, we can start to break it all down and start to sort of see the truth of what's happening really right in the heart of the present moment. And when the Buddha was talking about all this, he talked about all this as mundane living, mundane life. Even though we might even know what stillness is, we might have the stillness right in our mind. And I just finish off what I was just realised. I didn't sort of finalise that little comment I was making about Ajahn Chah before, as he was talking about the transcendental nature of the stillness of mind, just how it's a point of transcendence that we can always know. So he was talked about knowing the apparent, so knowing this first canda, knowing the way that this world is and seeing how it flows, apparently the consciousness of it all flows so apparently for us. But Ajahn Chah was talking about, though, to make sure that you know at the same time as you know the apparent, you also know the transcendent. So the apparent is beginning and ending all the time in this transcendent, in the transcendent part of the stillness of mind. So this stillness is really very important. And just really going on from that, you know, when you can even look at this a little bit even more deeply than that again, so that you know that this is transcendent, that you know the transcendent, you know the apparent. And as the Buddha said, all of this is just really, not just, it's a fantastic insight actually, but it's still in the realm of the mundane. It's mundane knowledge. But then he talked about knowing supra-mundane. So this is knowledge that's really beyond consciousness. So it's even possible to understand that, to have our minds kind of go deeply into that, to have knowledge in the supra-mundane, a knowledge beyond consciousness. And that's also possible to notice with mindfulness. If the mindfulness is really strong and it's quite present all of the time, you will notice that consciousness finishes. It has a propensity to finish. And then all this sort of feeds back into all of the things that the Buddha talked about, the Four Noble Truths. That feeds right back into that, because you see the first noble truth where of dukkha, and I think we all kind of basically get that even though it's not an easy teaching either, but the fact that life does have its suffering, there's a duality in life that does cause us all grief and suffering. But then the second and the third noble truth is really where I'm wanting to get to with here, is just the beginning of dukkha. There's the second noble truth, and the ending of dukkha is the third noble truth. So even consciousness itself has a propensity to finish. And it's really only when we kind of start to see this knowledge, have this experience, that you can start to really appreciate the true beauty of these seven factors of enlightenment that I was talking about here. The investigation, the energy that's required, and then moving through the celebration of it all too, just really working to and working towards an understanding that this is quite wonderful, it's joyful. And because very often at the start, when we're kind of looking at emptiness sometimes, it can be, you know, like in the beginning of it, because we're so used to the world and we're so used to grasping onto this world, sometimes it's very scary to let it go. So it can be quite a fearful thing just to let the world go. But as we keep practicing, we practice this way, and we start to see the joy and the rapture and the beauty that's right there in the silence, right there in the present moment. I mean, you've only just got to look at Ajahn Brahm to see this. I mean, he's really a wonderful example of this, just being able to just sit and just be still for any amount of time at all, really. Just, and this is not, it's not, it's very important to understand this is not a denial of our body either. It really is more a celebration of our bodies, the celebration of the universe, a celebration of all that's happening here for us, because everything that's happening here is perfect. This universe is a perfect thing. Everything is in balance in this universe. The only problems that we have really is the way that we see and relate to the world. And because we have to relate to it in a way that's a duality, know, so you've always got a positive and a negative all of the time working there. Because that's always there, it causes us grief and trouble. But this practice, this way of being with all of this, allows us to see a way through all of that, so that we can just be with the with those conditions of our mind that allows us to be so grateful and joyful, and just this and the experience becomes more and more subtle. It's more and more. It's not, you know, we're not sort of talking about experiences that are extreme, you know, the extreme worldly experiences that I've talked about before here too. We're not talking about anything like that. This is quite subtle. It's sort of bringing all those extremes right into the present moment, bringing it right into this beautiful balance that's there, and then being able to be with and see and celebrate that beauty. And at the same time that we're doing that, we're kind of celebrating the whole of the world, the whole of the universe, because it is all sort of interconnected, and it's all one. I was actually just walking down in South Fremantle on the weekend, and there was two little verses that was in one of the shops that I was looking at down there, and two verses from Thich Nhat Hanh, and it says, "We are all like we are all like leaves or individual leaves of the one tree." And then the next, the second verse was, "We are all like waves or ripples on the same ocean." So it's a wonderful vision, I think, that too. Just sort of noticing how our individual being, our kind of personal lives, are like that, like the leaves of a big tree. We can't really live without the tree. The leaves can't live without the tree. And the ripples and the waves in the ocean can't live without the ocean. But they all, and for my, when I was thinking about that, I was just thinking, I'll just sort of carry on a little bit further, because you can also see that we are all conscious beings of the same still consciousness. Because this still consciousness that we see in our meditation it's got a fungible quality about it. Fungibility means that it can sort of shapeshift. You know, we can take this still consciousness and we can use it whichever way we want. We can create our lives and create the flow of consciousness that's in our mind in any way that we want, which is what we basically do. And this is sort of following along with what Thich Nhat Hanh was saying there in those two beautiful verses. Just our beings, our being in this world is really so because we are part of this wider still consciousness. So just having said those few words, we'll maybe move on and do a little bit of meditation now and hopefully be able to sort of see some of these things in the meditation. So, if you'd like to just make yourselves all comfortable and feet nicely on the floor, and we'll just do a little bit of a balance first, a balance and also a grounding. Very lovely to be able to ground ourselves into this earth and feel the earth, because I think we've always must remember that we are part of this earth. We are creatures of the earth. We eat the earth. We recycle the earth, especially when we go to the toilet. So, you know, you can never be too high-minded when you're a human being, because we're always earthbound in a way. But yet, as I'll kind of explain in a minute, we are still too connected into the universe as well. This universe, our bodies are made from the stars. All the elements in our body are made from stars. That's where elements are made. They're made in the furnace of the stars. Explosions of the stars. So, back nice and straight. right hand on the left with your thumbs just gently touching, if that's the way you'd like to do it. Closing your eyes, closing your mouth and breathing through your nose. And just letting the tongue rest gently against the palate. And just allowing yourself to come into the body. Just making that resolution that the next period of time is for meditation. And then we'll just do a quick sweep through the body, just starting again at your toes. Just perhaps feeling your big toe on the floor or in your socks. Just get the experience of your big toe. Then just move over the arch of your foot and into your heels. Then up through the ankles, into the lower leg, the shins and the calves. And then moving through the knees, into the thighs. And just gently letting go as you let your mind flow through your body. Any tensions or any pain that might be there, just let it go. Just let it relax. And moving through your bottom, through the seat, up into your lower back. Just feeling that little arch, whenever I sort of feel that that's nicely balanced, that little curve in the bottom of your back, it's always a good sign for me that I'm sitting quite straight. And I've got the energy kind of balanced sort of right. And then putting your attention in your tummy. Just notice what you can see there, if there's any little gurgles or rumbles, movements. And moving up into your upper back, shoulder blades, and your chest, around the heart, any rhythms that are there. Little rattles. Then feeling the arms as they just hang down from your sides, bent at the elbows, into the forearms, into the wrists and the hands. And then again, as always, I just like to point to the energy that's in your fingers, just the nerve endings that are there. Because very often this can be a wonderful start to the meditation if you just notice that tingling that's there, just at the tips of your fingers, as you're just lightly letting your hands fold together. That tingling's quite apparent in your fingers. And it's something that it's a quality that you can sometimes just transfer to your skin, the skin of your body. So you get the sense that the body's sitting, tingling, effervescent. It's almost like you can feel a relaxation dancing all over your body. when that tingling starts to come, you can know that you're starting to relax. Your body's relaxing. And moving up into the neck. And up into your head, behind your eyes and on the top of your head. And around your lips too, there's sometimes this tingling sensation on the top of your head. And oftentimes, if the conditions are right for you, you'll feel like you're just a big ball of energy, almost floating off your seat. Quite rapturous. And just notice how you are being held down in your seat, held down on your cushion or on the chair that you're sitting on. And you can imagine the field lines of gravity that's pulling you down, holding you, keeping you earthed, grounded. In a way, keeping us safe. And even in a situation like this, it's even good sometimes to be really celebratory of your body, to really celebrate just the beauty and the wonder of just the way that your heart's beating and you've got life. The breath's going in and out. It's magical. Wondrous. And then you can just imagine the field lines of energy, those same energetic lines, maybe moving up into the universe, up past our space and out into the universe, connected into the stars, into all of the planets and the galaxies, and all the galactic clusters. Because out there there's stars being born all of the time, and at the same time there's stars finishing, dying, exploding their riches out into space. You can really start to see that we are children of the universe. When you're ready, just to come inside and just start to notice now that the mind has settled, has relaxed with your body. Just notice that it's not thinking. Sure, you're listening to the words that I'm speaking, is their beginning and ending. but essentially your mind is quite still. Let's move past the first two hindrances. It's not grasping, or it's not trying to push anything away. It's just nicely balanced, and it's content. And just notice what that feels like to be content. Content just in the stillness. Can you experience just what that stillness feels like now? Is it the sound of silence? Or as the Zen practitioners like to say, the roar of silence? Just noticing the contentment that's there with the mind still. And also any restlessness or any tiredness now is dissipated. So there's a nice balance of energy in your body. So you already started to work with those first four hindrances. The hindrances that stop us from becoming peaceful. You can notice the contentment of your mind. And notice the balance of your energy. This all goes well for the fifth hindrance, that of doubt. As you can see, that allowing these hindrances to abate is quite possible. You can see in your own mind the contentment that's there, the balance that is beginning to come. And when you're ready, you can just allow yourself just to naturally allow the breath to be in your mind. You can just notice the beginning, the flow of your breath, the beginning of the breath as it breathes in. And then breathing out to end the breath. And notice how that reconditions to start a new breath. Breath beginning. And a breath ending. All inside the silence of your mind. And you notice just how subtle the mind can get. How it can just enjoy the beauty of just being present in the moment. Because in a moment, I'm just going to ring the bell. But I'd like you just to reflect on what's happened for you. And if you can, I would like you just to experience that stillness. That still consciousness, that spaciousness, that emptiness. And when it is time to open your eyes and finish the meditation, just to bring that stillness back with you. As you're noticing now how my voice is beginning and ending in the silence of your mind. But when you open your eyes and come back to the room, to see if you can notice how that's the seeing consciousness. Just notice how the consciousness of seeing goes out to apprehend an object to look at. In the same way that your auditory consciousness has apprehended something to listen to. A sound, even though you're not necessarily even listening to the words that I'm saying. And so it is with all of these five senses: seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, and touching. And you can see how it's all subsumed into the mind, into the stillness of mind. The stillness is giving us an idea of the extent of our mind. And eventually we can get to see that the entire universe is there. I'm trusting and hoping that some of you are bringing that stillness back with you and can now still sense that there in your mind, the transcendent, it's something for us to cultivate and amplify if it's possible. Make it strong. It's a wonderful datum. It's a wonderful datum to bring or to have in your life, to be able to reflect your life from. It's a reflection from truth and the beauty of truth. So we just passed time now, and I know that Ron has again brought over some of his beautiful food for us to share. Dips, his dip, and some biscuits. And we'd very much like to invite you all to come and join us in the little vihara, the kitchen over the way, and we can talk further, discuss things if you like. And just remember too, for the people listening outside, that the care line is open. If you would like to call, you can certainly do that. It'll be open till 9 o'clock tonight, Western Australian Standard Time. And the care line is open Wednesdays, Thursdays and Saturdays from around 6 o'clock, 6:30, right through till 9 o'clock on those three nights. So you're very welcome to call. And anybody that would like to speak with a listener, a carer, there is always a person here on Wednesday night, so you're very welcome to come to the centre if that's possible for you to do. So having said that, I'll bid you good night, and thank you all for your kind and patient listening. And we'll pay respects now to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha.